right now joining us from the surprising, I think it's fair to say surprising, Oakland Athletics sitting a game over 500. Yeah, I know it's early, but give me a break, man. They're at Kauffman Stadium looking for a sweep today against the Royals, and they're supposed to be a pretty darn good team. Ken Korak, the voice of the A's, with us. Ken, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. We missed you down in Arizona, but thank you for joining us here. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in Kansas City.
Hey, it's a beautiful day, I'll bet you, especially since the A's went in there and smacked them around yesterday after a 2-0 victory to open up the series. I know it's only 9 games in, so silly question, Ken, but is there anything out of the gate that surprised you about this team so far?
Not really. They've played well, and I think one of the things that for the A's, you have to have good starting pitching. And Andrew Triggs is someone that I think a lot of people might have even questioned when the A's were thinking in the offseason that he could be a legitimate member of their starting rotation. He's come out and he's 2-0. As you know, he pitched well last night, 6 innings, no runs. He hasn't given up an earned run this year. And so if they're going to be successful, they have to have things like that where at the back end of the rotation, and especially because Sonny Gray is on the DL, guys have to pick up the slack. And so I think that's the main reason that things have gone pretty well so far.
Well, I want to ask about Andrew Triggs because I know that was a big question coming into the season, and it is so early. How much confidence do they have, or how much kind of cautious optimism is it at this point?
Well, like I said, I think they're really confident. And going into spring training, there was a lot of talk about competition at the back end of the rotation, the fourth and fifth starter spots, and Jesse Hahn lost out on that, although he's going to pitch tonight because Alcantara's gone to the bullpen. But they really, I mean, they had a lot of confidence in Triggs. And based on a fairly small sample size last year, making 6 starts really out of necessity because they had some injuries. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who made only 1 start in the minor leagues in all the years he pitched in the minor leagues. And he made his major league debut last year at the age of 27. So to answer your question, they have a ton of confidence in Triggs.
Ken Korak with us on KHTK. Ken, sometimes with young guys, and especially on a roster like the A's, where you do have a lot of young guys, it can be tough to tell if a guy is going to be just a guy or like a guy. And that kind of brings me to Jarrell Cotton a little bit. He was solid the other day, and there are expectations for him. But then you've got like Pedro Martinez talking about him and stuff like that, a guy that he worshipped growing up. And I'm wondering what you can tell us about Jarrell Cotton and what the future might have in store for him.
Well, when Pedro Martinez offers a glowing endorsement of a kid and takes the time to compare himself to Jarrell, even with a split screen on the MLB Network, I mean, that speaks volumes. So I think that the sky's the limit for this kid. First of all, he's a wonderful guy, and he's a guy that I think the A's fans will latch onto because he has an infectious personality, but the tools are there. This is not an illusion. His fastball can reach the mid-90s, and as Pedro pointed out, they have almost the same grip on their changeup, and the pitch that really, I think, made Pedro stand up was his changeup. So he's very good, and I think it's legitimate, and I think he has the potential to be a number 2, number 3 type starter.
Ken Korak joining us on KHTK. Chris Davis, the flukiness is over. And to be honest, there shouldn't even been any flukiness. The kid hit 27 home runs his last year with Milwaukee. Comes over here, jacks 42 last year. He's already off to a great start. That average might be, I don't know if he can maintain 350 for the entire season. But what do you see in Chris Davis? A guy who, if you don't watch the guy, if you don't know, he's not a big dude. He's 5'11", 200 pounds, whatever that. He doesn't come off as this giant monster, but man, can he hit the ball.
He might even be smaller than that. At this time a year ago, he had yet to hit his first home run. So he's way ahead of his pace, and he hit 42 last year. So, and I've said this many times, he hits the ball a long ways. And he's even gotten me to maybe even change my approach when he's at the plate. Because normally you see a guy hit a fly ball and you're thinking it'll be caught at the base of the warning track or maybe shy of the track. And with Davis, I have to wait because he gets this remarkable carry on the ball where you think it's going to be caught and then the ball winds up 10 rows back in the seat. So he has tremendous wrist, his hands and his arms. He's very quick through the zone, and that's where he gets a lot of his power. And I think he's also might be too early to say this for sure, but I think he's maturing as a hitter. He's always going to be a guy, I think, that's going to strike out maybe 100 times or more than that. It goes with the territory with some
power hitters, but he's becoming, I think, even more of a disciplined hitter, more of an all-around hitter. He's just really good, and it's really important to have him as their number four hitter.
Ken, I've got kind of a two-part question for you. I'm curious from your perspective, being so intimate with the team, in terms of what you think, or a player that you think may be the biggest surprise to keep an eye on this season, as well as someone that maybe is the biggest question mark for the season.
Well, that's a great question. I don't really know that I have a complete answer to that. I think, number one, the first thing that comes to mind would be Marcus Semien batting leadoff. And going into the year, of course, Rajay Davis was going to bat leadoff, and he struggled up there. And even though Rajay has tremendous speed, he's not a classic leadoff hitter, and then he's not going to walk a whole lot. So I think that's one thing to really keep an eye on with Marcus. He has a very high on-base percentage, even though the average isn't that great, but he stole his fourth or fifth base, I think, last night, 5 for 5. And so he's taken to batting leadoff on a team that maybe has really been searching for that after the first 5 or 6 games, and now Rajay batting ninth. So maybe that's the thing that stands out that I wasn't really thinking about or had considered the possibility of going into the year.
Ken, there's some things going on, too, with the A's. I guess they're off the field, I suppose, between the, you know, change with team president Dave Cavall coming in and doing a pretty good job there. But then you've also got, you know, tangentially related to you guys, in a couple of years from now, you're going to be the only show in town with the Raiders bouncing. Is that something that, I guess, is even talked about around there? What's the feeling around the franchise with that? And is that even really sunk in yet?
I don't know how much of an impact. I think it may have less of an impact than some people think. Now, there's no doubt. It looks like the Warriors are going to San Francisco and the Raiders are going to Vegas. And I think it does maybe heighten the awareness on the part of maybe even the politicians that we've really got to make this work with the A's. This is really important because we've got to make sure that the one club that's left is really viable and important in this community. Not that they weren't before, but I think that'll all maybe come more clearly into focus. But there's been a lot of discussion about, well, the Raiders are leaving, and how does that impact the A's and their chances of getting a new stadium? I was very optimistic, and maybe for the first time since I started doing the games 22 years ago, that regardless of the Raider situation, that the A's were going to get a new ballpark. It was going to be in Oakland. And I think the most important thing, and let's put the Raiders and the Warriors situation aside, is that there is a renewed sense of enthusiasm and optimism. And a lot of the things that Dave Cavall, the new A's team president, has been doing have received rave reviews, and especially from the fans. The fans are really energized by what's going on. And I think things keep happening almost every 3 or 4 days or on a weekly basis, like the announcement 2 days ago of the tarps coming off the upper deck. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more than just a symbolic move, although the fans and the media have really embraced that, because if you're a family of 4, let's say, and with the increasing cost of tickets and going to a ball game or any sporting event now, if you're thinking of laying out $150, $200, you can get a ticket up there for $15. And that's a great deal, and those are very good seats. So a lot of really good things are happening with the A's that I think are almost separate from what might be happening with the other franchises out there.
Ken Korak, voice of the A's, joining us on KHDK. You know, I've been a Kendall Graveman honk for years since the A's got him. I think the dude has serious stuff, and I know, you know, being down in spring training, we've heard the stories about how he got sent down. He had to work some things out. He came up a different guy, a more mature guy. And you look at his numbers, for example, last year, they don't jump off the page. But how much of where this team goes this year, how much of that's going to be at least in part on the shoulders of Kendall Graveman?
Well, it's big. And parenthetically, Sonny Gray is going to throw to hitters today at 2:30 here in Kansas City Central Time. And it's the first time he'll be out on the mound since he went on the DL. And it'll be almost a 15, 20 pitches, sit down, throw 15 or 20. And that's really a major step. And the next step might be going out on a rehab assignment. So it's possible that they would have Gray and Graveman at the top of the rotation by the end of the month, which is the way they mapped it out to begin the season. Now to your question, Graveman is 2-0, and he's been great. And people are taking notice around baseball. It's not a fluky thing. He is a top of the rotation guy. He has a phenomenal sinking fastball, and he's also a great example for the young pitchers on the club and those coming up in the system, in that the fastball is still the best pitch, and he's throwing it about 90% of the time. The other thing that impresses me, and I think even buoys the hopes of the A's going forward, he's very strong. He's tremendously physically fit. He gets a lot of power from his lower body. And I think, knock on wood, he's going to be a guy who's durable going forward. So the sky's the limit, I think, for Graveman.
First pitch, 5:05 today. A's looking for the road sweep against the Kansas City Royals. And you can hear, amongst others on the team, the dulcet, sweet, velvety sounds of Ken Korak, the voice of A's baseball. Ken, we always appreciate your time. You're always a good guy to us. And we'll talk to you throughout the season if you'll have us.
Anytime. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. That Thanks, is Ken Korak. Somebody texted on the text line. Ken may have the best radio voice in baseball. Yeah. I'll tell you this. I won't argue with that.
Yeah.
Ken's voice is absolutely a transistor radio, hot summer day. I mean, I know nobody has transistor radios anymore, but you get my drift. That voice that can carry through your backyard while a couple of steaks are on the grill, kids flopping in the pool, whatever it may be, whatever your images of summer are. Ken Korak's voice is in there. I respect the hell out of the A's franchise, especially that they do a ton with nothing or little compared to a lot of these other big spenders. And I think I have more of a kinship, if I'm being honest, with A's fans than I do with my own Giants fans in a lot of senses, because I think the A's and the Kings are very similar in you know, the market thing. And
stepchildren of the league.
Yes. I'll tell you, man, there's some A's fans that make it really hard. They're so sensitive, just like Kings fans.
Yeah.
You could probably say the same about Giants fans. There's no difference.
To the utmost degree.
Giants fans are snarky. Giants fans are snarky and full of themselves and egotistical. Whereas, again, you can't broad brush these. There's exceptions.
Say one bad thing about the Giants on social media and tell me they're not sensitive.
Oh, you know what? That's not a fair test
for anything.
Exactly.
I see where you're going with the sensitive thing. It's a different type of sensitive between Giants fan is snarky. Giants fan has become very much a little bit like Laker fan because of the success. A's fan is like they will look for anything for you to do, and you hate the A's, and you're a horrible person. For example. Quote. Well, so this guy said he's a nice backhanded compliment of the A's. I said, what are you talking about? I know the A's aren't supposed to be good, but hey, they're over 500, even though it's only 9 games into the season, which is how I started with Ken. The A's aren't supposed to be good. They're over 500, yet we're only 9 games into the season. Literally nothing there that wasn't a fact. And this guy, what he's arguing is that who says the A's weren't supposed to be good? You? Hold on, man. The A's have been good many a year when the quote-unquote experts have said that they're not supposed to be. That is a fact. But, Matt, you're the resident A's honk here. Did I miss something? Is there this groundswell of A's are supposed to be good this year that I just didn't grab in my Beckett monthly?
No, I don't think you said anything wrong there.
I mean, they're not supposed to be good. They're not.
No one knows what they're supposed to be.
I'll tell you what.
Isn't that kind of what it is every year for them?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Nobody knows what the team is
like,
until the game starts.
No one's going to say, oh, they're going to be horrible before anything happens, because you just don't know with the A's.
Exactly.
They're supposed to be bad. Now, if you're a fan and you want to say, well, just because you say that doesn't mean it's true. Remember this one year we made the playoffs. Of course. But when you're supposed to predict what teams do and the general consensus, the overwhelming consensus is that this team does not have the talent to compete – that doesn't mean that you hate the A's.
People don't know that the A's don't have the talent to compete, though. That's the thing, because nobody really knows what talent the A's have. They don't have the talent in terms of the names like the Giants or the Angels or the Dodgers.
Sure.
But what the A's have done is build teams with talent that work together
rather than
build all-stars.
They make something out of nothing.
Or at least try to, and if it doesn't work, they blow it up again.
Right.
Jeez. It's not like I woke up yesterday and was like, you know, the A's, they're probably not going to be good. I have nothing to base it on. They're just not supposed to be good. I'm going to throw that out there. God.
Nobody picked them to win the World Series. Let's put it that way.
Did anybody pick them to win the AL West?
No.
No.
Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs both have them finishing last.
Well, okay.
In the West or in baseball?
In the West, I'm sorry. Between 76 and 79 wins. So slightly below 500.
That doesn't make it a fact, Nate. And
but that seems to be the consensus,
he's supporting your...
I know, and I'm being the guy that's yelling.
Not that they're going to be a 100-loss team.
It's your opinion, man.
I hope they're good. I can tell you this. I think it's really cool, and I'm excited that they're going to be the only show in town. I think it's neat that... I hope that they get the revitalization that they deserve in terms of a new ballpark and just Oakland as a city being committed to them and only them. I think that's cool.
I think they deserve it, Matt.
I'm curious for your guys' opinion on it because Ken Korak mentioned the removing the tarps off the upper level they announced a couple days ago. My immediate reaction to that, even though I'm an A's fan, was a little concerned because the ballpark already looks empty enough as it is to open up another level and to see even more seats. What Ken talks about ticket prices is true. I mean, it's great to get good seats up there, but I mean, I've gotten seats down at the field for $20, so right. You can find them depending upon the game.
Yeah. And that's Dave Coval. That's his call, I believe. The Chris Granger of the A's is what I had heard, that he's coming in and making some moves.
But he and then Susan Slusser reported that it was based off of fan desire, what the fans have wanted.
That's the thing. I agree with you 100%,
Matt.
Well,
they're also donating half the proceeds from the third deck to...
I think that's just for the next series,
though. 10-game homestand.
Yeah, or the next homestand.
Now, if they were doing that for the rest of the year, if they opened that thing up and said, hey, screw it, we'll let you in for $1 or $5 or whatever it is, and we'll donate the proceeds, you know, that's actually a really good idea. The problem is, here's the problem, because the thought process is you're still going to do the game, you're still going to have the same operations cost, so even if you let them in for free to sit up there, you're going to get parking.
Right.
You're getting concessions. And that's I understand that way of thinking.
Probably jersey, you know.
But here's the problem, because I've often wondered that. Like, why don't more teams do that? The problem is that you piss off your season ticket base
that
has already paid for and bought their season tickets. And then now, well, you're telling me I can get up there for $5? And I paid my whatever per game?
But if they're saying the average ticket price up there is $15 when it's only $15 more to literally sit field level.
Yeah, I
wonder how that makes them think that they're going to raise attendance.
I'll tell you what would be cool is if that thing turned, you know, because I agree with you. I think it's kind of a goofy idea. It's just going to be a big eyesore. But man, if that turned into like where all the people that have the vuvuzelas and the drums and stuff just filled
everyone's
that thing up.
Everyone's in the third deck.
That would be rad.
That would be awesome. That would be one of the coolest things in baseball. It's like the bleachers at Wrigley. Like they just all go up there and that's where they can go nuts and crazy.
Ken's right, though. Those seats are great. I mean, there's really not a bad seat in the Coliseum.
When we got Darren Collison coming up here, let's preview this. You may have heard Steve Fisher is going to retire. Steve Fisher coached San Diego State and Kawhi Leonard. He also coached Michigan. That's where he's really famous for, Michigan and the Fab Five. Well, Jalen Rose played for the Fab Five. Mm. He wants to see Steve Fisher be in the Hall of Fame, but he thinks that Chris Webber – has made
what's
that
preventing it
an issue. Quote,
I love this beef between the
I do too.
Perpetual between Jalen Rose and Weber.
Chris Webber didn't own what he did and still hasn't apologized. And there's been a lot of collateral damage because of that. The number one person affected by that damage is Steve Fisher. He wasn't the person who lied to the grand jury. He's not the person not choosing to apologize or reconcile any of that. Yet what Steve Fisher accomplished doesn't get recognized. Because of Chris lying to the grand jury, the banners aren't hung for a coach who coached in 3 national championship games. It's like he never coached in them. There's nothing to acknowledge his accomplishments. Not to compare, but that's why I affectionately call my good friend John Calipari Teflon John. They hung a banner for him. Jalen Rose, not a fan of Chris Webber's.
No.
And if we're being honest, Jalen Rose is not the only member of the Fab Five that's not a fan of Chris
Webber. No, that's what I was going to say. Like, we don't need to say anything about Chris because the things that the people say about him speak volumes.
Yeah. And there
kind of over and over again.
You know, the guy who did the 30 for 30 on the Fab Five mm-hmm. was the same guy that did the Sacramento Kings 30 for 30, right? Jason. I got to know a little bit. And
it hasn't been aired, it doesn't exist.
You're right. I got to hear some stories about that whole deal, and man, Chris doesn't come off well. We'll continue to follow this as this develops, as Jalen Rose gets loose on Chris Webber. We'll take a break, come back. Our exit interview with Darren Collison coming up next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.